This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
Thank you for having me on today. It's a true pleasure to talk to you and shine a little bit light on this subject that you do so well. So yeah, my name is Melody Lundholm, Mel for short. I have had trichotillomania. I couldn't tell you exactly when it started, but probably for around, since I was around 14 years old, so maybe 15, 16 years by now, and have really gone through ebbs and flows with it. I wear many hats in my day-to-day life right now. I'm a marketing manager by day, and then by every other hour of every other day, I am a personal trainer as well as a breathwork facilitator. And those two modalities have truly been a passion that have kind of cultivated a really holistic practice for me that not only helped with coping with this, but obviously having kind of a general balanced, healthy lifestyle, but definitely play a role to kind of the practices that I use to help me stay balanced.
So where do you pull from exactly?
It's always been my head. I actually didn't really know that there were other places that you could pull until more information started coming out. So it was really interesting once I actually learned the name for trichotillomania that there was more than just head pulling. But for me, it's always been my head.
And do you have a specific like ritual when you're looking for the hair, finding the hair, pulling out the hair after the hair is pulled out, things like that?
You know, it really depends on the moment and kind of what triggers it. So many times, you know, it's so common that we find ourselves doing it without really noticing when it starts. And then we're kind of deep in the hole and have to have the awareness to kind of wake up out of it. And it's definitely fluctuated over all these years that I've had it. So much more controlled now, but not to say that every moment is perfect. I think when I started, there was definitely a lot more fear and embarrassment around it, which kind of made the habit of it starting even more daunting because I was just so self-conscious about it and didn't want anyone to know. Yeah, it's really kind of had its own journey. I don't know if each instance is really the same, but I don't know. It's one hand or the other. It's interesting for me. I don't really have a preference of a hand. There's usually one hand that does it more often for a time. And then if I try to block that hand, the other hand will wake up and come in. But, you know, I have had those instances where you feel for those hairs that have that extra texture, and then you kind of play around with it. The most frustrating thing for me has always been if there's like a patch of hair that's growing in, you kind of feel the hair starting to grow in. And then there's something about just kind of like feeling that area to make sure like, okay, hair is growing back, but then the hand just kind of stays there and then it ends up kind of playing around more and then causing more damage. So yeah, it's hard to tell until you're in it, but that's kind of what I can think of right now.
When did you learn and how did you learn about the name for trichotillomania?
Yeah, I was kind of in high school, I want to say, maybe around 2010, 2011, and it was a culmination of many people kind of coming into support. Obviously, it was, like I said, kind of embarrassing at first to even address that I had it, and so for a long, long time, it was just a secret of mine, and I just didn't really tell anyone and tried to cover it up as much as possible, but it got to a point where I had to say something, at least to my parents. My mom definitely started to notice when there were hairs on the ground, and she was the one cleaning the house, and she had to kind of pick up some different areas. And so, of course, I ended up telling her. And at the time, I was actually in just talk therapy for general anxiety. There was kind of some stress going on in life. And so, having a therapist to talk to was really supportive. But she didn't specialize in any type of BFRB work. So, once I started to kind of open up to it with my mom, she helped to guide me to a psychologist, and it kind of went down this road of a lot of different types of therapies and medical practitioners not really specializing in this. And so, kind of getting passed around to behavioral therapy and different anxious coping techniques and things like that, but never necessarily specific for Trick. But then there ended up being kind of one cognitive behavioral therapist that named it. And so that kind of brought the awareness to light of like, okay, this is something specific. It's not just a weird habit that I have, but other people have had this in their life. And so there has to be some level of research in it. And so from there, I kind of just took to the internet and saw what I can find. And even for a while then, I felt embarrassed to even look it up. So I didn't really go too deep too quickly. But just knowing that there was a name for it was really comforting. And then starting the long journey of all of the different ways that we can try to support ourselves and try to lessen the habit as much as possible.
Your journey sounds so similar to mine, where it was like, please, somebody help us. Like, who can help us? And it's like, go here, go here, go here. And it kind of made me feel worse. I was like, oh, great. Like, nobody knows what this is. Like, I'm totally a freak. How did it feel for you to kind of be, placed in all these different rooms and trying to find help? But like you said, nobody's specializing in it.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that. It was so hard because you're like, okay, they say this is a habit, but no one really knows what it is. And so, like, how is it such a difficult concept to comprehend if I have to live with this every day and no one really understands? And yeah, you do kind of feel secluded. I mentioned it to like a friend in high school when it was getting really bad and really noticeable, and I was a cheerleader in high school, so that's very visually like appearance driven, which gave an extra layer of just shame. And the one friend, not that she did anything wrong, but her reaction was just like, oh yeah, I've done something like that before. And it was just such a brush off that I was like, okay, but have you done it to this extent? Do you really know what I'm saying? And so I just felt misunderstood and didn't really want to open up to anyone unless they were someone that I hung out with on a very close level. And so I knew if we had sleepovers or something, they would see. But it took a lot for me to, I would wear headbands. Like I found all the ways to cover up as much as possible to really avoid any type of anyone noticing or any questions coming up or anything like that.
Did you have anybody ever bring it up to you on their own?
There were a few instances. So in cheerleading, obviously there's a lot of like hairdos and things that need to be kind of synchronized as a team. There's kind of one look that you decide on for whether it's a competition or a football game or something. And yeah, there were moments where I'd have someone be like, oh, you have a bald spot right there. And I'm like, And then just kind of walk away and not engage. But yeah, I mean, it's so much more in your head, at least for me, than anything else, that I created all of these stories and all of these reactions that other people are going to have. And they never really happened. Like, there were maybe a few comments like the one I just said, but nothing so extreme that they're not like chasing me down the street being like, what is going on? And so it was a lot of stories building up in my head that really put me down a shame spiral and then kind of created the anxiety to do it more. But yeah, luckily I was really skilled at hiding it. And with all of the sports and different things that I did, Yeah, just found the ways, found the accessories, found the extensions to hide it. And even for a while in college, I invested in wigs and I hated it because it felt like an extra layer of some of coverage that just felt so unnatural. But looking at me, you would have never known. And so that gave me at least the comfort to go out and be like, okay, if the wind blows too hard, no one's gonna know. But yeah, I've found so many ways over the years to really cover it up.
Did you notice th with your experience with trichotillomania that sometimes there would be moments where things would kind of grow back in and it was like, oh my gosh, am I cured now? Like, okay, we're moved on from this, only for it to eventually come back.
Totally, totally. And that would almost add extra pressure sometimes because I'm like, okay, it's done. That was the last hair I will ever pull. And then when the urge comes, it's like that much more discouraging. But yes, oh my gosh, that resonates a lot because there were so many moments that I was like, when I would catch myself out of kind of the trance of it and be like, that is the last time I'm ever doing it. I'm definitively done starting this moment on. And just, it doesn't work like that, unfortunately.
How did you feel about your parents' support? Like, were they helpful in the sense of, I know everyone's trying their best. Like, parents are always trying their best. They want us to be cured of this thing so bad. But sometimes it can be, there's a feeling of like surveillance where it's like, anytime I leave my room, am I getting looked at to see if there's hair missing? How did it go for you?
It's interesting. I mean, I think my parents just did what they could with the knowledge that they had. And obviously, they didn't have any knowledge of this specifically, but they did know that there was therapy and that was an avenue to bring some support that they didn't have the information themselves. And so that was kind of like the immediate response, like, let's go to therapy. And I didn't really see it as a punishment, but it was that added layer of, unfortunately, like they can't really relate to me on this level. They don't really know what's going on. And my mom is a very clean person. She likes to keep things very tidy. And so that added kind of an extra layer of pressure of, if I don't keep my space clean, I'm going to get in trouble, which I never really necessarily did. But I always just felt so self-conscious if there was like a pile and I had to just clean it up quickly before anyone noticed. I have a sister who's 4.5 years older than me, so she was kind of out of the house by the time it really started to progress with me. So she didn't really add any additional pressure or anything, but I think just the fact of like having the evidence in the house gave me just added pressure mentally.
Do any of your other family members have a BFRB? So not even hair pulling, but like maybe nail biting, skin picking.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting? So I've had nail picking my whole life as well. So that's kind of where everything started, this whole type of habit. And that's so common that it's so easy for people to be like, "Yeah, you pick your nails. That's a thing. We all kind of do that." And I remember my dad definitely had that as well as some skin picking, and my sister had the skin picking as well. And so that was definitely in the environment, but I obviously did not really know that the hair and the skin was related. It just seemed like completely separate habits to me. And so it did take a while for me to understand. Once I actually learned the BFRB term, which was only kind of, I mean, probably 5 to 6 years ago, then the light bulb moment kind of turned on and I realized, okay, these are related and there is some connection there. And so that kind of makes sense that these habits are involved in my family, but not to the level that I was aware. And maybe someone else does have this and they just haven't talked about it in my family, and that's okay. But I don't know anyone specifically that had it with the hair.
And I know you mentioned some of the physical barriers that you used to use for your trichotillomania, like the wigs and headbands and hair extensions. Are there other management tools that you find yourself going back to?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I can give you a lifetime list of things that I've tried. Like I said, all the hair accessories and things, but if I would just be at home, I wouldn't want to do my hair because even hairspray, leaving hairspray in my hair, just that texture of it kind of made it more inviting to kind of play around with the hair and feel it. So I really hated doing my hair if I didn't have to, if I was just kind of hanging around the house. But outside of that, I would find so many things. I think you mentioned on one of your previous podcasts how people started using like rubber bands and snapping the rubber band. I tried that for a while because I heard about that and I was like, I don't like this. It feels like I don't like the feeling of the punishment around it. So that was a very short stint of trying that. I tried like finger covers. I would try to like put tape on my finger and it didn't matter. I put gloves on my hands, like I could go on and on and on. And it didn't matter how many layers of things I tried to do to cover up my hands. I would just find a way to take it off and remove it. And that was that. Or I would put it on one hand and then the other hand would just start to come in. But there is actually one thing as of recently, within the past couple of months, that I created. I won't totally take credit for it because I don't know. It's not like a totally novel idea, but if you have just like a lanyard or something that I like a lanyard because it has kind of that clasp on one end. And so I wrap one end of the lanyard like around my legs so that kind of anchors it. And then I put the clasp either on like a scrunchie or a bracelet or something. And so if I raise my hand, it can only allow it to go so high. And so then I get that physical feedback of it pulling back down. And that's kind of been my greatest invention in the last couple of months. But yeah, in terms of like physical tools, I've had all of the like fidget things. I just had years and years of like, okay, maybe this will be the one.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. Did you ever try to do like toll-free challenges? And how did that go for you if you did?
I most likely did. I feel like I tried everything you could ever try. Yeah, there were days where I would start to like tally and be like, okay, I'm gonna have this visual reminder that like if I ever need to anchor back into something, I'm gonna have the sticky note, and every day I'm pull free, I can tally. And those things never truly worked, especially because on my day job, I work in corporate, and so I'm on the computer a lot. And just being kind of sucked into the computer screen, even if I have a sticky note right next to it, sometimes just being kind of like so attentive to what I'm doing, I don't even like, I completely forget that there's an outside world and that sticky note is even like 2 inches away. And so it's just like once it starts, then the whole distraction kind of starts again. But I've tried. Yeah, I've tried. I've put like reminders on my phone of there was a while I would try to do like hourly reminders of just come back into presence. And it does help. I'm not gonna say that none of it helped because I think every instance of being able to prevent yourself from doing it is a complete win. And one of the things I love to always remind myself is just win the small battles. I started to kind of have this visual of like each time my hand is kind of going up, it's my hand is one army, my hair is another army, and we're going up into battle. And every time that I can just resist the one urge to pull one hair, like you've won that small battle, and then you're on to the next battle. And so as long as you can kind of resist the one time, you've already won. And if it happens again, then all you can do is focus on that single moment.
What are some ways that you like to keep your hands busy?
I mean, really anything I can get my hands on, if it's a pen, if it's a hair tie, like I said. But nowadays, I have tried to really kind of keep the focus more on presence and breath. So I'm a breathwork facilitator, and just the practice of breathwork has been so profound in helping me to kind of stay in control and stay present. I think the more attention I put towards like external distractions or external kind of feedback tools, it just gave me more awareness of the situation. And then it would kind of just like build up this pressure again of like, it was a reminder that, oh, I can go back to pull my hair because this is a reminder that I shouldn't. But in order for me to kind of completely come back into the body, breath has been so immense with that, and having a dedicated practice has been honestly like really profound. And once I can learn to kind of realize that the mind is doing a lot of the work that kind of builds up the tension and builds up the stress that then leads to this physical reaction of touching my head, then I can just remind myself, like, okay, what do I need? And kind of check in. And one thing that has been really helpful for me is, I think it was last year, I created just for myself like a recalibration list. And so kind of just a checklist of things of, okay, when I start to feel the urge, or when I start to feel antsy, or just a little bit like I need to get expend some energy somehow, what are the things that I can check that may not have been addressed? So am I dehydrated? Am I like, have I been seated for a while and I just need to move? Do I need to get some sun? Do I need to just get like take a breath? Whatever it is, I've kind of created this list of things that really help me to kind of reprioritize and come back into the body and notice like what hasn't been addressed for a little while. And most of the time it's because I've been sitting too long, and so there are a lot of things that I can do to kind of just resettle back into a new state. And so that's been really helpful for me.
One of the breathing techniques, I don't even know the proper name for it, but like, you plug one nostril and then you breathe in and then you switch nostrils and you breathe out. That feels so good. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the alternate nostril breathing. No, I love that technique. I think that one's a great one because it helps you to, it's not just an in and out breath. It really like kind of forces you to focus on what you're doing. And so, yeah, it helps to bring your attention back. I love that.
Are there any breathing exercises that you find are your favorite?
It depends on exactly what I'm trying to achieve. So that's one thing I absolutely love about breath work is that it's so versatile, and depending on the outcome or the intention, there's a different breath. And even if it's the same type of breath, there's a different way that you can manipulate it. And so if I'm feeling really agitated and anxious and kind of tense in the body, tense in the chest, and I find myself kind of doing a short, shallow breathing, I love to incorporate just an inhale, exhale, but an elongated exhale. And so focusing on lengthening the exhale helps the body to activate the parasympathetic state so we can downregulate. And so that's huge. There's actually something called a physiological sigh that has been kind of my favorite immediate shift into a little bit of downregulation and just kind of like snapping out of any anxious patterns that are happening. And so that one is a three-part breath. It's an inhale. So you take a full inhale through the nose, and then at the top, you sip just a little bit of air, and then an elongated exhale. And so that sip and pause at the top kind of causes your brain and your body to like come back into presence. And yeah, the elongated exhale helps for that downregulation. And so that one's a really powerful one.
I just did that while you're talking. It felt great. I'll tell you what. Who or what inspired you to be more open about your BFRB?
You know, I think it's just other people being open about it. So people like you on the internet that are just open and have the courage to just acknowledge, like, this sucks and I deal with it. And it's not the people, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anyone that's like, I did this and I was cured.
It's common, and it's something that we don't have to be embarrassed about saying out loud. Yeah, I think I wouldn't say there was really one person, but it was kind of just a culmination of the realization that there are other people out there that have it. And I really just started to get fed up with hiding it. It took so much energy to put all the effort into, like, this is a part of me. It's been a part of me for over a decade, and it's part of the way that I live and the way that my body reacts to things sometimes. And it's not something to be ashamed of, especially like everyone has their own kind of coping mechanisms in their own way. And so it could be much worse. It could be much more detrimental. But I think the fact that I started to realize, like, yes, this is embarrassing, but there are other people
who are younger than me, who maybe don't have the information that I've learned over the years. And if this can support them, then why wouldn't I just be open and create kind of a safe space to talk about it?
What advice would you give someone who wants to be more open with their BFRB, wants to accept it more, just wants to kind of get to that point where you are, where you're like, hey, it's part of me, and that's that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I've learned through breath work and using breath to support that habit is just starting with curiosity and awareness and releasing judgment. When you can kind of step aside and view judgment as like a third party and just be in that state of curiosity and awareness, you can really start to understand what's kind of coming up in the body when that trigger starts. And that can really help to have those moments of pause and notice, like, okay, I'm starting to feel that tension in my chest. This typically turns into shortness of breath, and then that typically turns into anxiousness, and then that typically turns into my hand playing with my hair. And so once you kind of start to notice those physical reactions or just be in that state of awareness and curiosity, you can kind of start to notice those trends of things coming up at different times. And then, giving yourself a little bit of grace, I think, is always best. But yeah, it always starts with awareness.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you came with today wanting to share?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is knowing that you're not stuck in the place that you're at. It's taken me 15, 16 years to get where I'm at. And I can tell you within that time, it's been a roller coaster of feeling like I'm doomed and I'm never going to get over this habit. And other times where I feel amazing. And then it all kind of circles back. And just knowing that there's a future ahead, that you are going to have more wisdom and know that the coping mechanisms and the things that you learn along the way are helping and they are giving you lessons. And knowing how to support the body has been the most influential thing. And I think that is a very underrated piece of dealing with trichotillomania, of knowing how to really attune with the body so then you can find the ways to support it and kind of recalibrate and find that balance. So, doing whatever you need to do to feel good in the body and not do things out of punishment, but do things out of honoring yourself because you deserve to feel good in your body is key.
Thank you.